Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I felt. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
Hey, folks, welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. It's Brian here with Ashley and Rob, as always. Folks, how we doing this week after the closest finish in NASCAR history in an F1 race that I could not give two fucks about?
Oh, I'm doing excellent, friends. How are you, true love? You looking good?
I'm looking good.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what a, I mean, we'll get into it pretty quickly, but what a fucking weekend of racing.
Yeah, Kansas delivered yet again.
Yeah.
Yes. Just insane how good that track is, insane that we're talking about it now, and we want all these mile and a halfs back that, you know, we all hated 5 years ago, but yes, here we are. This is NASCAR in 2024, folks.
Well, they fixed that shit at least, so.
Yeah.
Got that going for us.
Yeah, we'd like, let's just get... You know, Chicago back and maybe Kentucky. Yeah,
I'll take Kentucky. That's only a 6 hour drive for me, so I'd be happy to go to that.
Yeah, it was pretty good after the reconfig, right? If I remember correctly, like it was okay. I mean, Truex would like wipe the floor with everybody.
I think the last race was actually decent from what I remember. And I don't know if that was before or during COVID. I can't remember when the last race there was, but it's still there. I mean, I've driven past it a few times and. Yep. It definitely could run a race tomorrow, so.
Yeah, they got like a bunch of fucking unsold Tundras sitting out there in the infield, I'm pretty sure, so.
Yes, they do.
Maybe Cletus McFarlane could go out there and put on a show before the Cup race and get a bunch of idiots to race those things around the little Legends track there. I'd pay for that.
He might have to upgrade from the Freedom Factory if he loses that place. I've heard the developments are... closing in, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that is a sad
story. That's a different conversation.
That is. Yeah, maybe we'll bring that up in the short track septic tank, because that's annoying news.
Oh. Did Brian quit?
He quit already. Yeah, he's so mad about Formula One having a race in the U.S. that he just logged off.
The audacity.
Yeah.
I was upset about the F1 race for other reasons than it just being in America, but we don't need to get into that because I already got into it on Twitter. And
did you? I missed that.
Oh, I quote tweeted The Athletic post about Trump, and I was just like, good, stay the fuck away from NASCAR. And thankfully, I got a lot of positive responses, but there were a handful of those, like, morons who were just like, how about you stay away from NASCAR? And I just immediately blocked them. Like, I don't care. Like, somebody was like, you know, somebody's like, why don't you stop selling all t-shirts with Republican drivers on them? Like, block immediately. Like, I don't fucking care. Like,
yeah, I'm shitposting. Yeah. Fuck you, I'm shitposting. Yeah, speaking of F1, highest ratings of all time, apparently, because all of us were bored as fuck.
Me.
I tuned in. Well, the fucking the Rich Vogler Memorial Classic at Winchester ended pretty quickly, and I was hoping that would overlap, but it ended. It was done in like half an hour, what it felt like. So I just flipped on F1, even though I said I wasn't going to, and it was okay. You know, not bad for a Grand Prix. That track, it looks cool. And it's, again, after taking a few months off of watching that shit, I can always appreciate the cars being as pretty as they are. But that's about where it stops. And, you know, of course, it was nice to see Lando Norris get a win, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch the race, but I did see, like, pictures and videos of Lando, and I do like him. And, like, it was nice to see an F1 driver win a race and be, like, happy and emotional about it versus Max, who's like, meh. Yeah. Just another day.
My my one friend did bring up the point that it would have been great if Lewis won, because there is not a chance in hell he would have even acknowledged Trump, and that would have been amazing to see. So,
well, there's not a chance he could have acknowledged the podium in that dog shit Mercedes they have right now. Yeah. He's counting the days till he gets over to Ferrari, and I'll probably watch a couple of those races when it happens. But yeah, overall, this was in the notes for later on in the show, but I guess since we're talking about Formula One, we can talk about it now. There was a little bit of a viral tweet, or several people posting their own images of the prices of some of the concessions in the VIP area. And apparently that was for a shareable portion, but still, yeah. I'm not spending $40 on carne asada fries to split with my friends.
No. I mean, it was like that last year, and I do remember the sign saying that it was for four people, but still. Yeah.
That doesn't make it much people. Better.
No.
Yeah.
How much was your pile of steak on fries at Talladega?
I think it might have been like $11. So. See,
and that could have fed the 5,000 in the Bible. So
Darlington's food is always actually affordable and decent, and compared to SMI food, because they're not an SMI track. So like, I'm excited. They always have retro food too. They always like have a different menu every year. So yeah, fuck F1 food.
Yeah. While we're way off topic, the Black Flag podcast guys, they were up in AdNoc over the weekend for the big NASCAR Wheel of Modified show. I'll talk about that a little bit later. In the septic tank, but they talked about how good the chicken tenders are at that racetrack, and I had forgotten this, but man, those are the best chicken tendies you can find in the Northeast at a racetrack at Monadnock.
What are they doing to them?
They're like got a really buttery kind of like coating on them. I can't explain it. I bought them
deep fried in butter.
They were like $6. Yeah, probably. I don't know. whatever they're doing up there in Winchester, New Hampshire is fucking excellent, though. So if you ever end up at Monadnock, make sure you spend the $7. $7, folks, on chicken tenders and fries. You will not be disappointed. Well, maybe that's partly why they taste so good, is because they cost so little. But
Till you get to Lebanon Valley this year. Like, the fries, probably the best fries I've ever had in my life there. And everything is cheap. They have like big-ass meatball hoagies for like $4 or $5.
That's the greatest.
You know, you can eat like a goddamn king for $20 there, no problem.
Yeah, that is happening this year. I got to make it to Lebanon Valley this year. So you just let me know where you're going to be around, Brian, and we'll go watch whatever's happening. Even if it's fucking EV Destruction, I'll go to that shit.
Well, I am still debating coming back that weekend of June 26th for the Restrictor Plate show, and if that happens, we'll definitely have to do a Valley night that night. So
I think that's the weekend after Loudon, so come up early, bud. We'll have us time.
I cannot spend a week up north, unfortunately.
Oh, come on. Yes, you can.
I can't. Anyways, we are so off topic.
Dover. Yeah. Even the truck race was good, man. The truck race was awesome.
Yeah. Rob put Dover on the notes this week. That's
Kansas.
Yeah, there was an ARCA race.
I didn't watch the ARCA race, unfortunately. But
I watched a little. It was fine. I mean, it was an ARCA race.
You don't want to talk about your new favorite ARCA driver, Brian?
Who's that?
Apparently his name is Cody Denison.
Oh.
Oh, that asshole. I don't listen. There's some listen,
more
folks.
Twitter beef.
It's not so much Twitter beef. He's just like very much an alt-right dickhead, and he's like just spouts a bunch of like transphobic and like misogynist shit online, and he's sponsored by the Tim Pool podcast, which again is another alt-right dickhead, and he was like many, many laps down.
Was everybody else. I think there's only like four cars on the lead lap at the end of that. So
yeah,
that's the only note I have. I'm going to imagine that Jake Finch or one of the other Gibbs cars won that.
Connor Mozek.
There you go. See?
Yeah, he did.
All the ladies in the race had a solid day.
Oh.
Yep. Another reason why that guy was probably pissed.
Yeah, Marco Andretti was in that race.
Yeah,
for some reason.
Yeah, he shows up sometimes.
That's about it. Yeah. I did make a note that in the middle of the ARCA race, Jamie Little did a live ad read advertising a football game that was going to air on Fox during the Cup race, which I thought was odd to advertise something.
Well, you know, no one's watching ARCA anyway, so I'm pretty sure he didn't lose anything off that.
That's fair. That's all my ARCA notes.
But yeah, the truck race I thought was good. Not a lot to say about it, just the quality, you know, mile and a half race. I enjoyed it.
Zane Smith was there.
That's right, he was.
Returning to his truck racing prowess.
Yeah, his perch of glory. But yeah,
he finished second.
That was a fun race. I enjoyed that. Brian, did you watch the truck race?
Yeah, a little of it. I mean, it was fine. Like Ashley was saying, there was nothing really that stood out to me, but, it's Kansas truck race. Yeah. It was cool.
There was so much short track shit happening at the same time, but every single series on Earth was doing their fucking pole draw shit for the dash, like, at the same time. It's like, well, I guess I'll flip over to trucks because I don't want to see this shit. There's going to be another hour of track prep, and I wasn't disappointed, so.
We had Lane Riggs screaming at Cam Waters after the race for 18th position. And then we had Carson Hosevar in the booth with Mikey. So those are my only notes.
Mikey was so excited. Oh, his crush. He got to be with his crush again. He was, he was in love.
Another tall guy up in the booth for once.
another very deep. Listen, Buffy likes tall guys. Mikey likes tall guys.
Exactly. They've all got a type. So.
Don't forget, Dale was tall too. Dale was like 6'2 or 6'3. So.
That's true. Speaking of which, during the cup race, it was in the pre-race, because of course the race got
the rain delay
by a few hours, which that's fine with me. I've said it on the show before. I like a good Sunday night race.
Oh yeah, I was totally fine with that because Sunday, I'll just say it real quick. I had an excursion to Columbus to basically buy a collection of shit that I'd won the night before on an auction. Old racer down there, like, he actually had an IMCA modified roller that I think only sold for like $1,000, but I was like, what the hell am I gonna do with that? But yeah, came home with a big late model diecast collection if anybody wants to buy some very expensive diecasts.
Yeah, those things are nice.
So yeah, the rain delayed race was totally fine with me. Unfortunately, I guess it hurt the ratings because F1, you know, like we mentioned, F1 beat NASCAR in the ratings. But
we're all fucking watching it. If we had nothing else to do, it was raining here too, so I couldn't mow the lawn. So yeah, that's usually what I'll do.
But yeah, the cup race. I mean, shit. At this point, you've already heard a million different discussions from everybody in the NASCAR media. I mean, it was, again, probably the best race of the year, regardless of the finish. Yeah. I mean, just the entire fucking race, there was stuff going on and people were passing. And, you know, this race really had everything you could ask for. Obviously, it had all the passing. Nobody was able to get too far away from each other. It had tire fall off. It had fuel strategy, cautions. The closest finish in NASCAR history. It was perfect. As perfect as it could get.
Even the rain delay stuff was great. Like I was about to say, Mikey was interviewing Austin Dillon at his hauler, and he was talking about, just
pickleball
up at Welcome. You know, and the quote that really got Mikey smiling, which was great. Austin was like, "Yeah, we got the whole crew up there. Though. They're going at it up there, upstairs." And then they just kind of pan over to Mikey, and Mikey just has this shit-eating grin on his face. He's like, "Oh yeah, they're going at it up there, huh?" So I liked that a lot. I'm sure we'll include that video in the...
Yeah, for sure.
Shout out to a friend of the program, Josh Davis, for sending along the screen cap of that. But yeah, what a fucking race. And even without the caution and the finish playing out the way it did, that race was going to end naturally in a really exciting way because Truex was fucking coming.
Yeah.
And I think it still would have been the best race of the year, even if it didn't come down to that green-white checker and things going crazy.
Yeah, there were great battles from start to finish.
Yeah, yep. Kyle Larson getting that by the hair of his chinny-chin-chin, that little beard he has.
poor Buescher, poor Ford.
Poor Buescher.
They were so close.
I thought Chase Elliott was going to win that race for a second.
Well, that's what I was hoping there for a second, but I always hate to see a driver scored as the winner and then start to celebrate and like the pure joy and then to have it like immediately crushed.
Yeah.
The thing is, from the wide angle that you saw, it looked like Buescher actually pretty clearly won. I mean, it wasn't a huge margin from that angle, but it seemed like, okay, Buescher had that. But then once you saw the replay, it was you could see Larson coming up and just beating to the line. And
Man.
Insane.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that, folks. And I know that Brian and I are both already planning on throwing a few plane tickets onto the old credit cards there and getting down there to Kansas.
Yeah,
next year.
I mean, we said it last year too, and it's just like, man, I have to do it. I mean, it's at this point, I don't think there's any other track in the entire series that I want to go to more than Kansas. I mean, that includes Talladega and like Bristol Night Race and all that stuff. Because I mean,
for pure racing, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You can't beat it.
There's definitely a couple that I'd like to go to just because I've always wanted to see the place, you know, Talladega, Bristol, places like that. But yeah, as far as the pure racing aspect is concerned, Kansas is definitely the gold standard in the Cup Series now, which I don't think anybody would have said that 10 years ago. And it's wild to fucking say it on a nationally broadcast radio program. So it's fucking weird. But yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it other than how good it was. Like, NASCAR on here, but there's literally nothing to complain about this weekend.
No, not at all. So I guess let's talk about the other shit that's going on in NASCAR then, because there is some stuff going on. Obviously, the charter system talk is still up in the air. Nobody has that figured out. That also plays into silly season, though, because for all intents and purposes, folks, Ryan Preece is going to be out of the 41 car next year.
Sounds
I think that's
like
all
it.
But been confirmed. You know, there's been talks. I guess Stuart Haas is openly shopping their charter if the charter system is still even in place next year. And apparently there was some sort of team meeting last week that Preece wasn't invited to about Kansas.
Well, apparently the other three teammates have started a study group, and they said that anyone and everyone is invited to it. Yeah. And then Preece chimed in on Twitter saying that he wasn't invited to begin with.
He learned about it on Twitter.
And he also qualified like dog shit, and the other three qualified great. So,
yeah, not
kind of a bummer, but at the same time. At the same time, there is discussion of Harrison Burton getting out of the 21 next year because his deal is up, and Preece shifting over there, which could potentially actually be a better move for Preece. Just with how tumultuous Stuart Haas has been, and at least Wood Brothers have the Penske program as part of their deal, so it could be good for him. I mean, that 21 cars looked like shit, but you know, for even though Harrison's a nice kid, he doesn't have it. So
well, that Pockrass piece that a lot of this conversation is centered around, that was the only other real definitive thing that kind of came out. And there's a lot of, you know, again, talking about the merger and all that, it's all hypothetical. But the one piece of that entire article that really stuck out to me is Bob basically said that do not expect Harrison back in that 21 next year. So I would like to see Preece land there too. I've been a fan of Ryan Preece for a long time. He's a local guy. I pull for him, but I would almost rather see him go back to Xfinity and kind of, you know, do his thing there. That seems to suit his driving style better. It sucks to see a guy come up locally and really have the whole community pull for him and then him just never really get it together. Going to Wood Brothers would definitely be like a fourth wind for him in the Cup Series. But again, that car is, when was the last time it really ran super well? Like, I think Matt DiBenedetto had a couple of okay runs in it, but it was really Ryan Blaney in the Gen 6 car was the last one that really was able to
put one in it.
Yeah, put up results. So, it'd be cool to see Ryan in such a storied machine, but yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of people in the pipeline that are itching to get up there. And I don't know if Ryan's going to be the guy. But again, I'd love to see it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And, Originally,
it sounded like SHR wanted to sell two charters and that they would be keeping Barry and Briscoe, but Gregson's been on such a roll lately, it's like hard to argue that they would want to give him the boot. I mean, didn't he get another top 10 this week?
He came close. I'm not exactly sure where. Maybe he was 11th, I think. We had the internet. We can pull it up. But yeah, he's definitely been the guy showing off the most. And honestly, Preece isn't having the worst year imaginable. No. Like, they got that big point penalty earlier in the year, and he'd be pretty close to the top 20 in points, which I guess out of 36 cars that run every week, that's not great either. But
Gregson's also been showing off with his merch this week for the two of you.
100% correct.
That's what I was about to mention. Yes. even though I do not love Gregson, again, he is having a better year and he's not being stupid off the track, which is good. But he is coming out with a line of merch inspired by Zin cans.
That's
and
right.
It's like, fuck, man. It's very hard to deny I want a hat or a shirt or something. So
yeah.
We'll see what they have.
Especially if it's a patch on a hat, like I will be wearing a Noah Gregson hat around. And it happens to be the exact same colors as the chill flavor, which is the only one I can get that I like up here.
The so cool, your favesy?
The cool can kiss my dick. I don't like the cool flavor. It's gross. But the chill is very nice. I'm a citrus guy, like I said, but you know, we got enough yellow on race cars out there. So what happened to Ross Chastain? Did we ever figure that out? Because he was running pretty well all day in that beautiful Busch Crocs machine, and he just kind of dropped off the face of the earth.
Maybe his Crocs slipped off the pedal.
Yeah.
He did have him in sport mode.
I don't know if it was pit stops or what, but yeah, it just, you know, a lot of people got shuffled around in that last round of pit stops before, so.
Yeah, but man, to get back to the charter thing for a second, this is going to get pretty ugly by year's end, I think, and into next year, because, the teams don't seem to have any sort of consensus with NASCAR. And, you know, the NASCAR would like, apparently, to frame the payouts around the television deals, which makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they also, it sounds like they almost want like a leader's circle kind of program like IndyCar has, where the money is dispersed on based on performance and that sort of thing. There was also talk of them wanting to open up a 37th charter for a member of the France family to buy into the sport.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, wow, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, that got shut down real fucking fast. talk about shit you don't say in a tense meeting.
Yeah, I thought the main arguing point was just really the distribution of funds, where the teams want a bigger chunk of like the TV money and whatnot, and that's what NASCAR is like just denying. So.
Yeah.
And with the charter system, too, if the charter system fails, then it's like, where's the investment, you know, that all these teams made? If anything, it just makes BJ McLeod look smarter for selling his when he did.
It does. And for Dale not buying one to begin with, so.
Yeah.
Well, he's been bitching about that because he's like, I should have got one when I had a chance, and now there's no fucking point because it's, you know, I'll have to spend X amount of money to do it. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. And while I understand the point of it took me a minute to figure out the point of the charter system, but it's hard to compare race teams to like sports franchises because like they're not as established. I mean, yeah, you have Hendrick and Joe Gibbs and all that, but you know, you look at the history of the sport and teams have come and gone. There's only been so many teams that have really stuck around for a very, very long time. And even with the charter system in place, it's like, how do you guarantee longevity for some of these teams?
Well, especially when even Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs are losing money.
Yeah.
Now, I guess $10 million is not a huge amount when you're playing with as big a wallets as those guys are. But still, a loss when you're already having to buy in is pretty fucking intense. And especially when you look further down the grid at teams like, you know, Live Fast, who sold theirs, of course. But, like, all the smaller teams, if $10 million to them means a hell of a lot more than it does to Rick Hendrick. So I don't really see how this is tenable in the long term. You know, I understand wanting a seat at the table and I applaud everyone for trying to assign value to these teams that's beyond the equipment in the building. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm not an expert at any of this shit, but I think I would much rather see a greater purse given to the teams and like a leader's circle program or like something that actually pays the teams a little bit more for their troubles every weekend rather than having them have to pay in if they want to be a part of the sport. Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Who's got $40 million to spend on a charter or however much BJ sold his for, you know?
BJ does now.
BJ does now. Yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I don't know. If this does collapse, no matter how it plays out, it's not going to be pretty. That's for sure. So.
No.
Mm-hmm. But enough of that.
A couple other notes, I guess, here. Natalie Decker, she is going to be at, let's see here, Charlotte, you know, Memorial Day weekend in the Bikini Zone Shave Gel sponsored car.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's good. Good for
it's
her.
Good new sponsors in the sport. That's great.
Yeah, the car's definitely got a Shauna Robinson kind of vibe going for it.
Yeah, a lot of pink.
Yep.
It reminds me of the, I think, I forget who drove it, maybe Patty Moise, but there was a Ramsey's Condoms car in the mid-90s, and it had a lot of pink and stuff on it, and this is kind of reminding me of that, but that's a different
story. I saw a tweet that said, you know, if we have to deal with the Dude Wipes car, then y'all have to deal with the Bikini Zone car.
Actually, you know, I got it hanging on my wall. It's a diecast of the Xena the Warrior Princess car that Patty Moise drove at one point. That was also bright pink. So
nice.
That's what it reminds me of. But yeah, nice to see some different colors out there. Speaking of colors, I really appreciated Todd Gilliland sort of throwing back to the Long John Silver's days of Front Row Motorsports. That was kind of neat to see.
Is that for Darlington?
No, it was in Kansas. I don't think it was Long John Silver sponsored, but it was definitely that blue and yellow. And I was like, "What the fuck?" Like, definitely had flashbacks to 2011. So,
That's weird.
I missed that.
But yeah.
Yep.
More sponsors are never a bad thing, I guess.
Mike Joy apparently let it slip on the broadcast that NASCAR is going to be going back to Bowman Gray, which we all kind of figured was going to happen once they took over. The promotions and management of that track. I guess we'll just wait and see what it's going to be. I mean, I think might have even been quoted as saying it would have been like an actual series race and not just like an all-star race, but who the hell knows? I mean, it makes sense to have, like, say, the Coliseum, you know, clash race there because it's pretty much the same thing.
Or the all-star race, you know.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, making that move, I mean, you kind of lose what NASCAR was trying to do as far as, you know, cater to a new audience, like they did in LA. But at the same time, like it's substantially cheaper for everybody involved, and you know you're going to get a good crowd at Bowman Gray. Yeah. So
they sell out the regular short track program there, so NASCAR would have no problem.
Oh yeah,
filling was it 17,000 seats, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm stoked to see that. I hope it does. I'm curious to see how they work it into the schedule because, again, it's so small, you really can't run a regular cup race there. But
no.
But it's got the heritage. They ran the Grand National Series there way back in the day. And I know a lot of people hate on Bowman Gray, but I'm not one of them. I'm a fan. So I think it's cool to see them go back to another one of the oldest tracks out there. And hopefully that actually comes to fruition.
Well, just have to wait and see. It sounds, I'm sure by the end of the year, I mean, who the hell knows what's going to happen with the schedule next year, especially with everybody now clamoring for the mile and a halfs. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure there's going to be some changes, but we'll have to wait and see.
Oh, another rumor is that they're actually going to Mexico City next year. So Kyle Busch might be putting on a mask or changing his name or something. If you remember, he got into a little bit of trouble down south of the border.
Not to play into stereotypes, but I'm sure some government palms can be greased to get him in there. So
yeah, well they greased him to get him out. So I'm sure.
It's just a double that grease.
Yeah, I'm sure the Mexico Tourism Department will be on the 8 car that weekend or some shit like that, or Telmex or something like that. They'll get it worked out.
Just have to wait for Mike Joy to have another senile slip up.
Yeah,
spill some more secrets.
All right, Rob, you wanted to talk about this. There was a little bit of a spat on Twitter yesterday between Landon Huffman and Mamba Smith over, I don't know, I guess like just...
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, True Love, since you've been off the internet.
I mean, you had sent the one thing, and I tried to... it was so long. There were so many like parts to it. It just like kept going. I was like, I don't know what's up and what's down.
Well, the crux of this, and of course, Mamba Smith and Landon are friends. You know, they've been friends for a long time. And I feel like this is one of those things where when you know somebody, sometimes text doesn't always translate in the way that you'd want it to. Essentially, Landon kind of called out Mamba for being a hype man for NASCAR, which is his job. He's literally on the fucking payroll.
His job.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and I think it would have sailed under the radar if Dave Moody hadn't have jumped in and started you know,
doing Dave Moody
doing
things.
Dave Moody things, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really want to bring this up because the whole crux of the conversation is that a lot of NASCAR media, if you listen to PRN or XM or MRN or any of those, it's all owned by NASCAR. Like, it's all directly connected to them, and it is essentially state-run media. So, and again, they do a great job of covering the races, MRN in particular. There's nobody better at it, particularly Dave Moody. I don't think there's many people who can call a race as well as Dave Moody can. Like, he's the best turn guy in the sport. There's no question about that.
Until he gets on Twitter.
Yeah, then he gets on Twitter or his show, and it's just like, the tone on XM is always so defensive, and all of the NASCAR media is very indicative of like, well, we're right, and if you don't like this, then I don't know what's wrong with you. That's kind of the vibe. And I think it's important for fans that are new to the sport to understand that NASCAR actually owns a lot of this media. And not that, you know, for the most part, and I guess this could go to a broader life conversation, just always consider your source. Like, yeah, Mama Smith works for NASCAR. Of course he's going to go out there and cheerlead for it. It's his fucking job to do so. As is Dave Moody, as is the guys in the morning drive, Mike Bagley, all those guys. Corey LaJoy is on MRN now, so essentially he's on NASCAR's payroll too. I think Stacking Pennies always was, so I...
I think you have to look at it two ways. One, this is an attitude that NASCAR as a whole has always had. It is their way or fuck you, and... They've got blinders on as far as a lot of criticism goes. They're not good with responding to it in a way that either fans or drivers like want to hear. And if you are a NASCAR employee, whether you're in the media or not, like you have to kind of be a cheerleader for them. Like we all know people that have worked for NASCAR or in NASCAR, and they can confirm with us that that's how it is. And if you're not one of those cheerleaders, you have to find a job with, you know, outside of NASCAR.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, I only want to bring this up just to say that like, this is with any media out there. Just take everything you hear with a little bit of a grain of salt. Not that anything MRN is saying is wrong or any of those folks on the payroll are wrong, but like, just remember who they actually signs their paychecks when you hear some of this stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
you should do that with any media. So. Except for us, we always tell it like it is.
Shoot us straight.
And there's no payroll here. I can tell you that much.
I can lose promise, money like the charter system.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can promise, I will speak for just myself. I have zero desire to work for anyone in NASCAR. I am very happy doing my little collectibles thing. That's about as far as I'd like to take it.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a tough business for sure. But yeah. I thought that was a funny little exchange. But again, like I said, I think it's important for people to remember that NASCAR does own a lot of the media that we get to hear. And that's pretty obvious. Oh, real quick. I just watched. This is the first time on this show where I've ever actually put the Cup race on from the previous weekend on while I'm down here recording. And it's true. Todd Gilliland actually does have the Long John Silver scheme on his car. So getting the throwback in early. How about that? I didn't even know there were Long John Silvers still out there. So
there
are a couple up here.
maybe they like sell Crocs and fucking like USB sticks online or something like that, like Timu does. But I don't know. Good for them. That was cool though.
So Rob, now you get to talk about IndyCar for a minute. There's obviously it's the month of May, so we all know what that means.
Yeah, month of May is here. IndyCar Grand Prix this weekend, which, again, I typically don't watch that race, or I'm not that excited about it. I think it's cool they do it, but it's just extra for me. You know, I really don't care about road racing a ton, especially not these days. But that it's always cool to see him get started at Indy, and the following week begins the whole practice routine and all that, and we'll be... qualifying, and you'll be hearing about Indy for the next like 2 or 3 weeks nonstop for me, because it's all I really care about when that happens. But the big news coming out of IndyCar this week is that Roger Penske suspended pretty much everybody involved with the whole push to pass thing, including Tim Cindric. He'll be taking a couple weeks off here, or a couple months off for that matter, next two races. It's Tim Cindric and a couple of the strategists and all that from his team. Amazingly, the drivers are completely immune to this, even though they're the ones pushing the buttons. But I don't know, I guess you don't want to take Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin out of the car before Indy. But pretty big stuff coming from Penske. Kind of had to do it. It sounds like Chevrolet's got some lawyers involved, and this could get really ugly behind the scenes. But Tim Cindric in particular being the big name here that's taken the month of May off, which is pretty crazy because he's always been up there for Joseph Newgarden and whoever else at Penske, and he's a big part of that team. I'm sure he'll be, you know, zooming in from a, you know, Motel 6 around the corner. The parking lot of the Taco Bell where Scott Dixon got robbed, you know, something like that. But yeah, month of May's here. I'm really excited about it. Again, this is the great dilemma with IndyCar is that the Indy 500 means so much, and it's such a cool event, and they can never really tie the rest of the season in. So this would be the one time you hear a lot about IndyCar this year coming up. And I said this to you guys earlier. You're also going to hear a lot about Kyle Larson. Not so much because I'm a fan, which, of course, you know, I am a big fan of Kyle Larson. But this is the first time in a very long time where there's been a legitimate short track, not just a short track guy, but like a sprint car, a midget guy, getting a shot in a competitive car, which is a very serious throwback to the way things used to be. Yeah. Back in the 60s and 70s. So I'm really stoked about that. You know, not to shit on Brian Clausen or any of the attempts he did with Jonathan Bird or anything like that, or the IRL era, but this is really the first time since Tony Stewart we've seen anybody really come from that world and have a legitimate shot to show well, maybe even win the thing. So I think all the short track fans out there are really excited about that.
I would say even NASCAR too. I mean, again, I'm not the biggest Larson fan. I like him and I respect him, and it's inarguable that he's the best driver in America. So, I want to see that. I want to see how he does, and I'm obviously rooting for him. So,
and shout out to Kurt Busch. He actually did pretty well in his first time out there, too. That was a little different. But he did manage to get sixth and definitely showed his talent. And, Larson's a little bit more versatile than Kurt Busch is, I think. So I would expect at least the same out of him. The expectations are high. But again, at the very least, it's super cool to see a dirt guy get a shot at the biggest show in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And those IndyCar guys are tough, man. Like, it's not going to be easy for him. So it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah.
So, just strap in, folks. I'll be talking about toe speeds and all kinds of shit coming up pretty soon. So.
So with that, I guess it's time to move on to the short track septic tank. And unfortunately, we have to start off with some bummer news. The Pensboro Speedway, the big reunion, or not reunion, but the big revival race at the track has been canceled for Memorial Day weekend. They're saying it's because of rain and whatnot, which, you know, I can't argue that on some level because it has still been pretty rainy up here in the upper Northwest. But, it's a bummer. I don't know what the track looks like. I think the other thing
it was flooded a couple weeks ago. So
that, I mean, that picture they posted looked like a straight up pond.
Yeah. They've been very quiet since making the announcement they were switching to the big track. So I was just very apprehensive. Like, I was still planning on going, but I hadn't made any sort of, you know, arrangements to stay anywhere or anything like that, just because I was waiting to see, like, you know, they hadn't announced any car counts or anything yet. So they're still planning on racing in October. So, you know, depending on the weekend, hopefully I'll try to make it down there for that. But a bummer, because I think a lot of people were excited about that. I hadn't heard as much from drivers, but I think especially the community down there all wanted to see that track come back. So,
I mean, we're about 3 weeks out, so I would imagine that most people were this is probably about as late as they could have postponed it.
Yeah,
because now it's time to start getting the entry fees and getting your plans together. And there's other shit going on that weekend. So. Yeah, it's a damn shame. I noticed you didn't want to read what I put in the actual notes as the title of the segment here. Pensboro no moro. I thought that was pretty good. But hopefully not for long. Hopefully they get it sorted out by October. It'd be cool to see that place come back. But it's tough when there's a creek running through the middle of the track.
Brian, you should go down there with your shop vac. And
I was just going to say, suck some mud out of the place.
Listen, I have... emptied
put your cracks
mass
on.
I have cleaned out empty swimming pools and stuff before, and that is a mess. I can't imagine what it's like to clean up a dirt track like that, not to mention having to redo the surface and all that shit. So
And speaking of bad racetrack news, we kind of alluded to it earlier with the Cletus McFarland deal down at the Freedom Factory in Florida. Apparently they're trying to build a brand new development that is right next to the racetrack, like literally in between the Air Force. Yeah, like a subdivision right between the Air Force base and the racetrack. So I don't know what the fuck these people are thinking. They're going to hate it no matter what, because the Air Force isn't closing down. I can tell you that much. So they're going to be dealing with fucking Raptor noise all day. But yeah, hopefully that we'll keep an eye on that situation. And I know Cletus and the whole gang have done a nice job of getting that place operating again. It's not just his own show. He brings in a lot of late model series. ASA Stars race there. He's running it. It's good. It's an awesome place, and they put people in it, and it's popular. So hopefully they get that sorted out, and hopefully we don't lose another racetrack to complete bullshit development that those people are gonna be pissed off anyway. So
because they live in Florida, that's why.
It's true. Well, I'll try and blow through this as quickly as possible, because for all the excellent NASCAR racing there was this weekend, there was also a shit ton of great short track racing. Justin Grant, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, he picked up a big USAC win at Eldora and then flipped his car trying to celebrate. That was pretty funny. I love that shot that they posted on Instagram. It was just kind of like the booth. And
oh, yeah.
You can always kind of hear people in the background. Mm-hmm. In these things, because you know the mics don't have like you know, filters on them or anything like that, so some guy in the bag after he flipped is just like, what the fuck, you know. So I think that was all of our reaction to that, but good for Justin getting a big win there. Yeah, Eldora is such a great racetrack, and anytime they do a big event with USAC, it's always pretty cool. I guess the Four Crown might be the next one. I think I'm missing one in between there. But for USAC going to Eldora anyway, that'll be the next big show they do, I think. David Gravel, of course, coming in there and whooping everybody's ass on Saturday night. Sheldon Hodenshield picking up the Friday night win, finally finding some speed in the Klaus and Marshall 17 there. It's always good to see one of the 6,000 NASCARs get a win, because they all seem like good guys. Also in the sprint car world, Brad Sweet is probably definitely going to win his own championship this year. He whooped everyone's ass this weekend at Lakeside. That was a cool race, too. The World of Outlaws late models went to Mississippi Thunder for the Dairyland Classic. That was a great race. Nick Hoffman winning on Friday night. That's always good for two or three extra beers for me. Then Ryan Gustin winning the big show on Saturday. Also in late models, Tyler Erb got a nice win at Adams County in the MLRA series after the cup race. It was kind of cool to immediately flip over to Flow and watch some late models rip around a dirt track. I'm a big Tyler Erb fan, so that was cool. Up
was
north,
his entire family there with him?
Yes, they were. Yeah, all of them smoking cigarettes. It was great. Anytime Tyler Erb gets on the mic, though, it's a good one. I like seeing him win. Up north here, Jake Johnson got his first Wheel of Modified Tour win at Monadnock. Unfortunately, I did not get to go to that. The weather up here, it wasn't supposed to rain, but it always looked threatening, and it's just far enough away for me to not want to make the drive. But they've done such a nice job bringing that facility into the 21st century. It's one of the nicest racetracks in New England, and I'm not a big Jake Johnson fan, but it was cool to see Old Blue in Victory Lane again, and I'm sure we'll see plenty more of that with Jake. He's definitely a bit of a shoe. Sunday, we had the Rich Vogler Classic at Winchester. I already mentioned that. Cody Swanson whooped everybody's ass. And Bobby Santos, I believe he came in second. Oh, a big fan of that guy. He's a Massachusetts dude. But again, so much fucking short track racing happening right now. And that's not even to count all the stuff that got rained out. Unfortunately, Lucas Oil got rained out over the whole weekend. That's been pretty much the deal with any short track series. I'm surprised we saw as much as we did. But yeah, a little note to all the folks who do end up going to the Kansas race. Hopefully Heilemit keeps running their big 410 show at Lakeside, which is just a few minutes away from Kansas Speedway. So if you go watch the Xfinity race, you can take a quick little drive over to Lakeside. Like I said, I think it's about 20 minutes away, something like that. And even if it's not Heilemit, they usually try and run a big dirt track show there. Usually it's modifieds, and like Kenny Wallace will show up and that sort of thing. So just a little tip for all you NASCAR fans out there looking to get a little bit more out of your weekend. But that's pretty much it. Friend of the program, Kyle Armstrong, did send me this little collection of clips from a television series. I forget what it was called. Midnight Cowboys, I think. I think it's what it was called. Anyway, it's about some. They picked like three or four like rural guys and followed them, and they kind of told their life stories a little bit. This is pretty old, I guess. Tyler Carpenter was only 18. When they film this, and it's a really cool look into him trying to get his business together and kind of living in the shadow of his dad's legacy and trying to match it, and basically racing being the only thing he knew, and kind of a nice little glimpse into his world. Whether you like Tyler or not, watching this will definitely make you gain a little bit of respect for him, and I'm sure I'll post the link to that in the show notes here. It's definitely pretty cool to watch. It's really well filmed, and it gets you in your feels about short track racing and not just the big time stuff, the small time stuff just up the road from you, which if you have a racetrack by you, make sure you go because they need your help. So that's about it for the short track septic tank. And we're since we watched Formula One this week, we'll class it up. We're going to go ahead and flush her down right now.
Was there a DARF, Rob? I don't see any DARF of the week in the notes.
You know, it's amazing. Like, I didn't see a ton of negativity on the internet this weekend. I guess my DARF of the week would have to be the 4% of people who said that Kansas was a bad race on the Jeff Gluck poll.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, I don't know
how you hated that. Right.
Yeah, I mean,
even
don't.
As someone that hates Kyle Larson with every fabric of my being in the Cup Series, it was still the best race.
If Larson wasn't on the property, I would have loved that finish, no matter who it was. If Chasen won that race, I would have been stoked about it.
If Corey won that race, I would have been excited about that.
Denny, Brad, any of them. Like I said, even if it played out naturally,
because that's the rest of the race was fantastic.
It was so good from start to finish. And even the booth handled it pretty well. One thing I will complain about, and again, this isn't a race thing necessarily, but like Fox just placing commercials in all the dumbest places imaginable. Like, they made it really hard to kind of stay on top of what was happening because so much was happening. So sometimes they can get away with it a little bit. Like at Martinsville, they could probably just run an Applebee's ad the entire time and no one would be any the wiser, you know. But in this race, it was unnecessary. But if you voted no for that reason, you're missing the point. And you're definitely my DAR for the week because I don't really know what you're watching this shit for if you didn't think that was entertaining. Real quick, my race of the week is the World of Outlaws show at Jacksonville from earlier in the week. I think they ran on Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember anymore. That was a few beers ago, but holy fucking shit. It's the shortest track that the World of Outlaws go to on the schedule. It is just elbows up, aggressive racing. If I can find a link to the feature, I will share that as well. That was, up until Kansas, that was the best race. It might even still be the best race of the week, even above Kansas for me. But yeah, just a lot of great action this week. And if you're a short track fan or just a racing fan in general, I don't think there was really a bad one this week. So I'm sure there was somewhere, but I didn't see it. God damn it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess that means it's time to take a look at the big O tape from last week. The 1988 Orange County Fairground Speedway fan cam footage.
Boy, this is a fucking good one.
I really didn't know how to tackle this as far as notes and analyzing it goes, but I guess we'll just kind of start off here. So I found this tape originally just kind of doing my normal YouTube searching, and because within the first 10 minutes there's an untelevised TNT monster truck race, I immediately hit up one of my friends about this, and it turns out that someone in the monster truck community actually found this tape before me because they clipped the monster truck section, and that has like two or three times as many views as this entire tape does. So I guess that's why that section was a little more well known already. But overall, I mean, there's just so much going on in this fucking tape. And so in my research, I found that this probably took place in July, August of that year, because the monster truck race was July 21st and 22nd. And I think the dude goes to like two or three races after that. So to start off, you get a nice good 10 minutes of just clean, quiet footage of the track without any sort of commentary or anything like that. Just shot from the outside. I will say, though, I noticed there is a kid that swears. Like, there's the camera's filming the track, and there's a wreck or something, and the kid goes shit and then immediately gets scolded. I had to listen to that three or four times, so I thought that was funny. From what I gather here, so I'll put it this way. The guy filming, he's definitely like an older guy in his probably 50s, 60s. I was going to make the joke that he kind of reminded me of Frank Rizzo from the Jerky Boys, but come to find out later on in the tape, you learn that his name is actually Frank. So perfect, like just
he is
perfect.
Frank Rizzo. Yeah,
yeah. I was gonna. Oh, go ahead.
I don't know who that is, but I watched it with Andy, and he said that he reminded him of Peter Griffin.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar characters.
Yeah. Yeah, but Griffin, as a Northeast guy who knows his accents, like Griffin has a Rhode Island accent, which is a lot different than this guy's. This guy's clearly, I mean, Middletown, New York, for those who don't know, it's not too far from like New York City, New Jersey, Philly. I mean, it's definitely closer to that part of the tri-state area.
It's
than,
far enough away, though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I grew up in Albany, which is probably 2 hours north this track. I've never been there. I know they're still running, but I've never been. So that's kind of why I guess that guy has that accent. And I guess the one note I wanted to say about that is it is incredibly funny to me to hear, I don't want to say like redneck or white trash, but I mean, when you go to races, I mean, it's definitely more of a good old boy type of scene at yep. those races, and it's very funny to hear that type of accent in that setting. Yep. Because you just not used to it.
Yeah.
But this guy, so it takes about 6.5 minutes for him to start doing commentary, and then he does not stop the entire fucking video.
Looking good.
we'll get to that in a second, but yeah. Very early on in the tape, like I mentioned, there is a 5-minute clip of the TNT Monster Truck Challenge series running at the track at the same time as a big race weekend, and I'm almost 100% sure that the actual fair at the fairgrounds was happening while this race weekend was happening.
That would make sense.
I mean, there's so many people, so many cars. You can see the Ferris wheel in the background in a bunch of the shots. It's insane because, like, you can go to any short track now, and I mean, aside from maybe Eldora, like, you don't see this many people and this many cars at tracks anymore.
No.
Like, it's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that the fairgrounds type setup is a dying breed. You'll still see like demo derbies and shit, even up here in Massachusetts, they'll have little demo derbies and all that. But the fairground bull ring is definitely something you don't see a whole lot of anymore, and it's a damn shame.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the monster trucks real quick, because obviously as the monster truck guy on the show, when I discovered this, I was just in absolute heaven, because anytime you get to see monster truck footage you've never seen before, it's a special moment, especially old shit like this. As far as the trucks that were there, I mean, it was pretty much the standard TNT roster from that era. The anomalies being Toasaurus Rex, which that was a truck that barely ever raced anywhere. I think it ran a few USHRA events, and I believe that truck was kind of from that part of the country. Occasionally at TNT races, you would get regional trucks showing up and entering because it was open. Like anybody who had a truck could run. You didn't have to be a part of the series. So that truck was there. You see the first Buffalo Tremor. That was the black and gold version, which that was a really cool looking truck, but it didn't really race that much. The second one that was red and yellow, you saw a whole lot more of that. And then there was also the unpainted Awesome Kong, which Awesome Kong is that skinny bodied orange truck. In this clip, though, it's still yellow because I think they were still, I don't know if they had just built that body or just finished the truck or what, but it hadn't been painted yet. And our buddy Frank says this is the ugliest truck he's ever seen, which I can't totally argue against. I mean, it is a fucking bizarre looking truck. I love it because it was so different than anything else that was out there at the time, but it is kind of ugly, but it's just very funny to hear that. And he is just completely in awe of all these trucks, and honestly, he's in awe of every single thing he sees because he's just just stunned the entire video. Like, oh, look at that, just yelling and so excited to see everybody.
Yeah, his enthusiasm the entire video is so precious, and you can tell it's 100% genuine.
Yeah.
But there's something extra in that monster truck segment where he is just, his mind is being blown constantly. Like, he's got his catchphrases in that segment are probably my favorite.
Yeah, it's good.
Or the sounds he's making, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, I mean, 1988, like, the monster truck trend was, this was almost its peak, but there were still people that hadn't experienced those things in person yet, so
yep.
That's what I'm assuming was happening here.
Yeah.
There is an amazing shot, though. So Frank's got his buddy Kenny with him, and they're just looking at all the trucks. And at one point, Frank is filming Kenny in front of Bigfoot, and you see Bigfoot driver Rich Hoosier sitting on the fucking roof of the truck smoking a cigarette while these guys are just jibber jabbing in front of the truck, not acknowledging them at all. I love that.
Yeah, like, just that was great.
There's a lot of little moments like that in this video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll get it's to so that. Good. So, yeah. After the monster truck section, we get into just the normal racing stuff. And from what I gathered from this...
One more thing I want to say about the monster trucks. That whole segment 100% reminded me of that TNT event that me and you went to in Raleigh a couple years ago, like the throwback event, like to a T. Like, if that event we went to had taken place in 1988, that was...
Well, that's
especially like the fairground, like the location setting and everything. It was
that's cool. Why they did it at those fairgrounds that we went to, because so many of the TNT events were done at either short tracks or fairgrounds back in the day. I mean, there were a couple arena events, obviously, but 75% of them were in those settings. So yeah, I mean, this was the quintessential TNT era. You know, you see a couple full races. I was trying to find results because, again, this is untelevised, but I mean, the expected trucks ended up winning. But then we go into just the normal racing stuff. And from what I gathered, so here's my guess. I actually posted this video a couple different, like, old school modified Northeast Racing Facebook groups, and nobody really gave me any tidbits on it, but I am guessing that Frank the filmer is related. Maybe it's his son, maybe it's his nephew or something. He's related to Frank, the driver of the Zero Street Stock car, because that's who Frank is with. Frank isn't just a fan, like just filming shit randomly. Like, Frank is very clearly here with this Zero Street Stock team. You know, you end up later in the video seeing them loading the car at the house and stuff. So that's why he's there filming all this shit. So there's a lot of footage of that. But we learn that Frank's wife is Meemaw. And I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed that. And yes, obviously, Ashley. So
I wanted more of her. I wanted like an interview with her.
More Meemaw, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't expect to hear that up in the Northeast. That's always kind of a sign that is more of a Southern term, but I suppose not.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what other notes do I have here? I mean, a lot of it is just him kind of like driving or walking through the pits and like pointing out cars and like, oh, there's that guy and this guy's from here, and he'll see his friends and his friends will flip him off or do something funny in front of the camera or whatever.
Yeah. That shot of Brett Hearn giving the autograph and all that.
Like, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Just relax. I got stuff to say about that.
Well, okay.
Go ahead.
So I don't know if you're going to mention this or not, but while me and Andy were watching this, you kind of figure out that the reason he's making this whole video is for his grandson. So that's
a few times. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why he's like narrating step by step by step and saying names and saying, oh, there's, you know, there's your Meemaw. Like, this video is for his grandson that can't be there.
And there's a couple times where he's like, hey, my grandkid's going to see that, to like guys flipping him off or whatever. So that was pretty funny.
Love it.
I got a note here. Let's see. At one point, there's actually cars on the track driving, and you can see King Crunch being towed on the outside of the track, which is just mind-fucking-blowing to me, because I've never been to a monster truck race where there was other racing happening. I mean, aside from, like, mud racing or whatever.
But this is like all of your worlds colliding, you know, the big block modifieds, monster trucks, all in the same little VHS frame. That's
And I couldn't quite figure out where monster trucks were running. I part of me thinks they were in a separate part of the fairgrounds, because like in my head, like, how the fuck are they going to clean that track up to get cars on the track after the monster trucks? I mean, they're clearly running the monster trucks during the day and they're going to run racing at night. I couldn't tell, because as a driver, like a driver of dirt car, like, I don't think I'd want to be on a track that just had crushed cars on it. I know, like, at Lebanon Valley, when monster trucks ran there, monster trucks would always be Monday to Wednesday. That way they'd have plenty of time to clean up the track for the weekend racing.
Right,
so I don't quite know how that all worked out, but the fact that they were all there at once is just insane, and wish I could have been there for that.
Seriously, yeah.
Let's see. What else here? At one point, let's see here. What notes do I have? He starts talking. There's a rain delay, and he just starts talking shit to other guys in the infield.
Yeah, he does.
Says, what this quote, Uncle Frankie's taken off with John McGill's girlfriend. I don't know what the hell that's all about.
Well, some for the grandkids.
Yeah. And the next day. So after the first day of footage, the next day we see them loading up the trailer at the house. There's a guy putting a cooler in the truck, and that's the first time we hear Meemaw. There's definitely a separate car that Meemaw's in. That's as Frank bitches about. They got air conditioning. It's like a newer Lincoln or something, and they got to sit in the truck on the way to the track. 31 minutes. There's Dr. Dirt kissing all the girls. He's got a beer in his hand. He's got his buddy Dr. Dirt. He points out Dr. Dirt a few times throughout. They're going into the track. Frank is saying everybody's nervous. They yell out at what I'm assuming is Buzzy Rudiman, because I don't know how many Buzzies there are. Like, there can't be too many Buzzies that race dirt modifieds in the Northeast, so I'm assuming it's Buzzy Rudiman. At one point, there's a bunch of women in the back of the truck that they came there in, and he calls them the bathing beauties of Orange County Speedway, and the ladies are not into that. Because it rained the night before, the pits are very muddy, and it's a struggle getting all the cars loaded and unloaded. And once again, he's commenting on every single car he sees, which is funny. And parked right next to him is a dirt modified number 71, and it rolls in on like a flatbed towing trailer, which is quite the way to do it when everybody else is on, you know, racing trailers.
Everybody loves an open trailer, man, like
yep.
that.
Yeah. Every single time he walks past the Cam 2 fueling station, he goes, $2.50 a gallon. Every single fucking time he says this. And at 36:45 is when Meemaw meets Brett Hearn, and Brett's like signing her program for a while, and Frank's like looking at the t-shirts and shit. And then we
he's got a great mustache.
Yes, he does.
Oh, Brett had a wonderful mustache, Brett, and he's wearing... He's wearing like 4-inch inseam shorts is also. let's see here. More pit footage. The track has a pretty cool Monte Carlo SS as the pace car. 43:50. He points out the lap counter, and the quote is, "There's a lap counter. Well, that doesn't start till the race starts. Thank you, Frank." Again, that is very clearly a moment where he's talking to his grandkid, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
At this point, he moves over to the front stretch, which there's not as big of a crowd as I would have thought, but again, it was a street stock, so that makes sense. The O car that he's with is having issues that day. The quote is, "Frank said he had his foot to the floor all the way down. Would not go." That's Frank's quote.
You don't want that. Yeah.
Then we see, then Frank is filming driver Frank with his lady getting cozy in the back of the truck. Meemaw's right there, and Frank's heckling him, which is very funny. It's more modified stuff. Let's see here. Frankie in this race, he's on the outside pole, but immediately shits the bed. They pull the car into the pits, pull the hood off for some reason, and he goes back out on the track and runs like one lap at like half speed, and he's back in. This is when I'm starting to feel like the people around Frank are getting kind of annoyed. You can just kind of tell.
That's
like,
when I started getting annoyed with Frank.
Yeah. It's the first 45 minutes or so, it's like, okay, Frank, I like this, but then it starts to get annoying.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because in that 4-minute monster truck clip, like I was looking at the comments, nobody fucking liked Frank at that point. So, and these guys only saw a couple minutes of him. So,
this video you can watch the first 45 minutes and then skip to maybe like the last 30 minutes. But after that first 45, I felt like I was starting to go insane with like just listening to a broken record.
Yeah. Well, you know, what my favorite thing about this video is that it definitely kind of unlocks some childhood memories for me, not from the racetrack necessarily, but, you know, the late 80s, it was kind of not quite the beginning, but very early on in the ability for people to have their own video cameras to bring around. And my dad was a very early adopter of this. We had one, I think, in 86 or 87, and he would just film everything. And just the way that people kind of got tired of it being around is the exact same thing that would happen at, like, family reunions or whatever. And it's like, are you going to put that fucking thing away or what?
Yeah, it's very clearly a deal where it's like, when people see a camera, they'll make some goofy gesture or whatever and acknowledge it. But then it's like, okay, why are you still filming it? I mean,
these are the days before cell phones even, you know. Right, so it's very funny to see. You know, we're all used to cameras just being out all the time now. Mm-hmm. And just to see such an in-depth look at the pit area or whatever in this era where that's just not a thing is a super special thing to witness. This is my favorite video of the week we've ever had for that reason. But yeah, everyone's tired of Frank's shit, so.
Yeah.
Going back to the notes, they show, he points out the Coors Light Butch Jelly number 8 car, which I love because I saw both Butch and Wayne Jelly at Lebanon Valley a bunch. Like, Butch Jelly was a pretty well-known Northeast Dirt Modified guy, so that was a little pop for me. Then there's a bunch of crew guys flashing their tits at the camera.
Yep.
And more people just walking around.
That was my next note, yeah.
cut to another new day, and this is when we know they're not happy with Frank. Almost immediately on this next day, Frank's got the camera out, and you hear some crew guy go, "Hey, Frank, go easy on the camera," and then immediately it's off.
I would have loved more footage from there, from the house, like them working on the car instead of the shaky, nonstop filming at the racetrack. He got shut down.
As soon as he turns the camera back on, he just immediately exclaims, "I'm gonna kill that kid." No idea what the context of that was, but they're loading the car into the trailer. He points out that it's August 7th, this particular day. And I think, I don't know if it was because the people at the house were telling him to cool it off with the camera, but you kind of sense that Frank is, like, not as excited. Like, maybe he's a little bummed out or offended that people told him not to film as much because he doesn't quite have as much excitement in his voice this time around. I don't understand why the O car had two different color numbers. Like, the driver's side was just all white and the outside was orange. That was weird to me. He points out the lap counter again. At this point, the fair's over and the turnout isn't quite the same. at one point, he cruises the Cam 2 line. He just literally walks down and just films every single person. People do not want to talk to him or anything. People are, like, flipping him off. Then he sees a guy walking with his girlfriend and just points the camera right at the girl and, like, says, like, "Ho!" or some shit like that. he does that a few times with women, just kind of leering at him.
I love the guys in the fuel line blocking their faces with the cans.
Yep. That's good. He stops by the racing warehouse trailer, and the only thing to say about that is there's a little pug there in the trailer, which I love dogs, so that was cool. Yeah. His buddy Dr. Dirt pops up again, who then flips off the camera, and you hear somebody off camera going, "They probably won't even develop that now," which is very funny.
Yeah.
So he sees Brett Hearn again now, and as soon as Brett sees him, he immediately gets the fuck out of there. Like, he says hi to Brett, and Brett just immediately just leaves.
He's had enough of Frank and Meemaw. Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess really, like Ashley was saying, from here on out, there isn't a whole lot to really say. I mean, it's really just kind of the same shit that he's been doing. If you love watching this footage, it's just a whole lot more of it. At one point, he's walking between the cars, like all the modifieds getting ready to go on the track, and he's making every driver wave at him, which had to be incredibly annoying for the drivers. Like, why are you fucking bothering guys in their car? At 1 hour, 16 minutes and... One hour, 17 minutes and 30 seconds, he is just filming a guy that's passed out on a trailer for some reason. Just, like, fucking very creepy.
The guy was probably pretending to be asleep so he didn't have to talk to Frank.
Yeah. Could have been.
Looking good.
Looking good. So, yes, Frank is very repetitive in all that he says, and especially
he's got catchphrases.
He's got catchphrases, but looking good. He says looking good to just about every single thing he sees, whether it be a car, a person.
Yeah, if you played a drinking game with looking good, you would be dead.
Before
this video ends.
20 minutes in,
I was going to say, long before this video ends, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
really, and there's really not a, like I said, not a whole lot else to say of these last 45 minutes or so. It's kind of just him filming and him doing his thing. I guess the only other thing I noticed is more with the cars themselves. This is still the era of modifieds where people were running a lot of different setups, not just with the chassis and things like that, but bodies. You know, say if you go to a modified race now and you look at the cars, the modifieds that are on the track now kind of have looked the same for 20, 25 years, but in the 70s and 80s, they were still figuring out a whole lot of shit, and yeah. Cars had all sorts of different, you know, cockpit areas and that type of stuff.
The vast majority were ripping off the Batmobile by this point. They all had that sort of giant roof on top, but...
And Brett Hearn, to me, it was very noticeable how much more modern Brett Hearn's car looked to everybody else's. Like, his car just stuck out like a sore thumb to me in a good way, but... I don't know. I think that really kind of peters out the main talking points of this video. Again, 2 hours. It probably could have been an hour and a half, really, to get all of it. But yeah, just amazing.
Less than that. 45 minutes.
Sounds like you guys enjoyed this video just as much as I did. So any last words on Frank's journeys to Orange County?
I mean, you just don't get to see this sort of thing very often. I know it was probably annoying for everybody involved while it was happening. But, I mean, I've never seen this much footage of a garage area from the 80s before. Like, it's just so good. You know, and like you said, like the difference in cars, it was a very, like, transitional area or era, excuse me, in dirt modified racing, excuse me. And it's just super cool. Again, because before this, there wasn't really a proliferation of cameras everywhere, and this is kind of the very beginning of that. So I feel we missed out on a lot of history just by people not having the ability to record it in an effective way. And this is, again, just watch it with the sound off if you get tired of Frank, because it's super, super cool.
I will be hearing "Looking Good" in my sleep for months, as well as "Here They Come" every lap.
It's in my vocabulary
and
now.
And "My Hero" before every name he says. But I think y'all summed it up well. Like, but my favorite thing about all of this is that, you know, you watch this 2 hours of him narrating this video for his grandson, and if you look, his grandson is the one that ends up, he's the one that posted this on YouTube, and if you look at his grandson ended up being a modified dirt racer. So to see, like, it come full circle, I thought was really beautiful.
That's fucking awesome.
Real quick, I'm gonna play a clip because not only do I feel like Ashley is Meemaw's spiritual successor just in name, but here's the clip.
Going up to Meemaw, buying souvenirs. My goodness, money must burn a hole in the pocket.
She's got on this great, like...
She's got
a great, like, ringer shirt, too, in this video, which if anyone knows me, you know I love a fucking ringer shirt, so...
Who doesn't?
There's another clip where he's, like, just panning around, and he goes, "There's a Meemaw waiting for the races to start, just sitting there and sweating." I was like, that's me at the races, just sitting there sweating.
I posted that in our feed today, at one point I stopped counting the Meemaw references because, you know, he just kept saying it so often, but I mean, I still laughed every time he said it, like, it's still so funny to me.
I did not tire Frank in that regard,
not the Meemaw, but looking good, I could go without.
Yeah, looking good,
But yeah, great job finding this, definitely an incredible time capsule. And I hope that now that this is in your algorithm, it opens up a whole new world of shit. And mine too, because I'd like to watch more of Frank's exploits. So,
well, it's funny that I like I said, I posted I sent the monster truck clip to a buddy of mine. And I guess there were more, and I didn't even get a chance to watch them, but there are some more fan cam footage of just the monster truck stuff from that era. So You know, I'll have to check that out. But yeah, just I hope I find more like this. Maybe not necessarily as long, but if it is as long, I'm not going to complain, because regardless of how much of a broken record Frank got, it was still amazing the whole time. Yeah. So
I will say that at Lakeside during the High Limit show this weekend, there was the support series was a bunch of street stocks just like these, the old school ones. And they put on a hell of a show. So if Lakeside happens to run when we go to Kansas, which we are, I'm not letting that die now. We're going to Kansas in the fall. But if they happen to be running, hopefully that division will be there and we'll get to see some of this in person.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And now moving on to the video of the week next week. So next week, NASCAR is going to be in North Wilkesboro for the All-Star race. And Ash and I will not be there this year, but I'm sure we'll be watching. And... you know, people talk about how racing way
they're in
back.
In Darlington.
This coming weekend they're in Darlington. I'm saying the video of the week next week.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Never mind.
Yep. So next week they're in North Wilkesboro. And, you know, there's always talk about, oh, racing was better back in the day and this, that, and the other thing. And what I was able to find was a broadcast of the 1970 cup race at North Wilkesboro. It's only an hour long, but it's actually, because they weren't live back then, you know, it's not the whole race, it's kind of just segments. But
is this NASCAR Classics or is this somebody else?
No, okay. Somebody else. Because you can see at the very end, like, it must have been a DVD or something they hadn't uploaded, but it's a little over an hour. Chris Economaki is doing commentary on it, which is great, and there actually are commercials in it. So that will be a wild 50-something-year-old time capsule to check out. It's the 1970, Grand National, the Gwynn Stately 400. So this is pre-Winston Cup era. So much, much, much different than anything that most people will have ever seen. So that will be next week's Video of the Week playlist. It's already on the playlist now.
I haven't seen it, but I hope you like cars being multiple laps down. So I'll just say that.
Much like the ARCA race.
Exactly.
So this coming weekend, NASCAR is at Darlington, and I'll be at Darlington. It's my first NASCAR race of the year, and I'm incredibly excited. I will be at the track both Saturday and Sunday.
Fuck yeah.
So if anybody listening is going and wants to hang out and have a beer or something, by all means, DM us, because I'll be there. Saturday, I'll be by myself, just kind of floating around, and Sunday, I'll be there with my stepdad. So, nice. Please hit me up and we'll hang out. But weather so far is looking good. Looks like it's going to be in the
80s.
Looking good.
No rain in the forecast.
Staying dry.
No rain in the forecast or anything, and in the 80s. So it'll be a good weekend. I mean, the last few years there have been good. Hopefully Chastain doesn't have a repeat performance of last year, because that was a huge disappointment. But I don't know, man. I'm just excited. It's always been too long. I wish I could go to a NASCAR race every month, but I can't. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my big weekend. Are you guys doing any racing stuff this weekend?
Fucking hopefully. I'm gonna try and go to the makeup date for the Stafford Spring Sizzler. They're supposed to be running on Friday night. The big tri-track modified feature, or is it tri-track or open? It doesn't matter. There's a big modified feature happening on Friday if the weather holds off, but of course, we're looking at intermittent showers all day, which has been the story of every single race that's happened in New England this year, which is a bummer. But I will be there regardless. I think I might just, it's only 40 minutes away. I might just haul down there and hope for the best. You know, maybe I'll save my wristband for later in the year when it gets rained out again. And I'll have a whole stack of those fucking things in my refrigerator. But we're going to try it, though. It's going to be a good race weekend. There's a lot of shit happening this weekend in the short track world, too. Wednesday and Thursday, for all you midweek folks, Flow Racing Night in America series, which is Dirt Late Models, is happening, so that's always fun to watch. And there's a bunch of other shit going on too, but yeah, I'll be at the Sizzler on Friday, and if you guys happen to be there, as Brian said, just come have a beer with me. It'll be fun. We'll sit in my car and we'll complain about the rain. How about you, True Love?
No racing for me this weekend. My next race isn't until the Coke 600.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah, there's a very slight chance that all three of us will be on the property for that one. I'm going to try and make that work out. But I know that True Love is going, and Brian, you're definitely going to the 600 now, or are you still on the fence?
I'm still on the fence. I mean, I haven't made any plans yet. I was kind of partially waiting to see what you want to do. I mean, I can kind of figure out a couple different places to stay, and I think I could get my dog all sorted. But no concrete plans. But I know that weekend, if I don't go to the 600... I know, let's see, the Outlaws are running at, I think, either Fremont or Attica on that Monday. Mm-hmm. And I know the Outlaws are in Sharon Saturday the 18th, so I'm probably going to go to that. So we'll see.
I usually have a big barbecue here at the house for Memorial Day weekend for the 500 and the 600 and all that. And also, Thompson is running a modified show on Monday, which is super fucking cool. So if I don't make it down to Charlotte for the 600, I will definitely be there on Monday at Thompson if the weather holds off. But you know how it is.
The old wait and see.
Yeah. I bought a nice Columbia rain shell last year, and I've used it more than I wish I wish I would have. So that'll be coming with
your money's worth.
It just stays in the Jeep, I'll tell you that. So
cool. Well, folks, I guess that's going to wrap it up for this week. As always, you can find us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram, Meet Me at Bees on Twitter. I'm Speedway Screens on all the things, and speedwaytsj.etsy.com is the store. Meemaw.
Why don't you just
find me at the souvenir trailer?
Why don't you just change your name to Meemaw on the internet?
Meemaw True Love.
It's the number one contender so far, I'll say that.
So far, I'll give you that.
Yeah, RobMoats_unofficial on Instagram. And that's it. I got nothing else going on right now. except for Friday at Stafford. Come get wet with me.
Gross.
It will be. Seriously, it's fucking May now. Does it have to be 40 degrees and raining all the time? Like, come on. All right.
Yeah, well, eventually it'll be 97 degrees with 100% humidity. So just
we'll be bitching about that.
Different kind of wet.
Cool. All right, folks. The check is here. So thank you again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will talk to you next week.